every time we get a new customer, we're learning how to spin up a DAO a better way. And so every time we do it, we're making improvements in our process and seeing what things can be improved. Where someone may spin up a single DAO in their life, you know, we're spinning up several every month. If you're looking to start a DAO, if you've got an idea for a DAO, you've started your community already, come talk to us. We'd love to hear what you're working on and potentially work together.
Welcome, everybody, to our very first episode of the year, 2023. It's here, baby. We kicked off the new year on a Twitter Space with the first of what will be a recurring series of Twitter Space public discussions about, drumroll, you guessed it, the network state, the future of civilization, and a ton of other related DAO leadership and core contributor subjects. We had over 200 people, 9 speakers, and a dozen other people who spoke up and raised their hand inside the space with comments, and DAOs from all across the ecosystem live in one spot. If you don't want to miss out on the next one, then this is what you got to do. You got to just follow CityDAO on Twitter, or follow me on Twitter as well, at MemeBrains. You can find CityDAO at CityDAO on Twitter, or me at MemeBrains. Really simple. And remember to smash that subscribe button on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever it is you happen to be listening to. I'm asking you to do this because it really helps the show. It just takes a moment, literally 5 seconds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hit subscribe and give us a 5-star review. There are no ads on this show and it's my only ask for you today. So now that we have everyone on the planet that you've ever met in your entire life subscribed and given your 5-star review, it's time to dive right into the show with a really cool venture that I've been bumping into a lot lately. I'm talking about Origami, and I've co-hosted on one of their Twitter spaces. They've co-hosted here on the CityDAO Twitter space, and there's most likely, and by most likely, I mean definitely, going to be a lot more collaborations coming up. There's a lot of synergy and shared perspectives and passions about the industry that keep popping up, and I was usually talking with Andrew on the Twitter spaces, and that's kind of my main contact. So today we get to go and meet Matt for the very first time. And you can find Origami on Twitter at JoinTheOrigami. There's also going to be a link to the show notes of this episode. If you don't know how to spell that, just go to the show notes of the episode and check it out, podcast.citydao.io. And they're setting up, as per their Twitter, they're setting up the world's most valuable DAOs for success. They have an apply link as well that's going to be in the show notes. So if you're thinking of launching a DAO or if you just want to reach out and chat with them, you can click the apply link or just reach out to them on Twitter. I'm sure that Andrew would respond. And you can also just ask me too and I can connect you. That's totally fine. Now, Matt, you are here. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show today, man. How you doing?
Thanks for having me on, Eric.
Anytime, man. Why don't I get you on the Twitter spaces? Are you just too busy or do I come across scary? Is that not your specialty? What's Andrew's role too? I don't even know what his role is actually at the company.
Yeah, Andrew is leading growth for us. My role is more on the operations side. So once we decide to work with a community, I'm helping them to actually spin up their DAO. So that's where most of my focus is.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And this is an interesting point. When I first bumped into Origami, I thought that Origami was a DAO. And it's not a DAO. Origami is a company. And now that I have that clarified in my mind, it makes more sense that you get to follow the typical org chart of a startup, you could say. And a lot more things make sense to me on how you guys operate. Why did you guys choose to go company route instead of DAO route? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, so it actually the origin story of Origami starts with the DAO. So myself and my co-founders, we met in Orange DAO, which is the Y Combinator alumni DAO. So we met there and we realized that so much traction was happening around Orange DAO that other communities wanted to do the same. And so we had figured out a very unique way of scaling up a DAO. And we wanted to help other communities to do that. So at first we looked at doing this within the DAO, but we realized that actually DAOs aren't very well structured for that. We're working with traditional communities, traditional companies. They want to have like a person that they can work with and not this DAO structure that they're very unfamiliar with. So we actually thought that for this instance, for what we're trying to do, a company is actually the best way to do this, to be able to support our customers. So that's why we're structured as a company. I think startups are very good at rapidly iterating in series, whereas DAOs are much better at iterating in parallel, but they operate at a slower cadence. So there's different use cases for each of them. But for our case, we felt that a company was best.
And you guys picked up about 6.2 mil on a round raised by, I think Bloomberg Beta was the lead on that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Bloomberg Bale led our seed round. I think that closed a few months ago.
And would that be your seed? Yeah, it is your seed. And was there any board seat discussions on that? Well, I mean, you don't have to be fully disclosure, but like, are they on your board? Or like, I'd imagine you guys are going to work a lot together moving forward too, right?
Yeah, yeah. It'll, they're really built around the future of work. And so they see DAOs as a future of work. And that was their thesis in investing in us. So we certainly see that as well. I think DAOs are going to become this new way for people to interact with communities and for communities to operate. A lot of people ask me, what is a DAO? And my answer is always, it's a governance operating system for communities. And so whatever community you have, whether you're the Y Combinator alumni, the Kauffman Fellowship, or just a group of people with common interests, a DAO is a very good way to have this distributed power and a very flat organization that can still get stuff done.
What do you think about, so like, what is a DAO, right? What does that mean? There's one camp that says and criticizes or critiques maybe how many so-called DAOs are actually decentralized or autonomous or organized. And there's like a spectrum scale to all that stuff. Whereas the word, like to me, the word is starting to carry its own definition of just a empowered community and less so on the individual letters of the acronym. And I think about when I'm going to go take my flight, I'm going to say, oh yeah, I'm going to jump on the plane, right? I'm going to take the plane from here to there. But it's not an airplane, right? It's a jet. We don't use airplanes to go international travel in the vast majority of cases, but we still say plane. And people just generally accept that it's not a plane, even though we're saying the word plane. We're just talking about what it is we're trying to do. And that's, in that case, travel. And the same thing with a boat going across the water. Often we say, oh yeah, it just sailed off. Yeah, the boat sailed off. Yeah, but there's no sail on the boat most of the time, right? It's diesel. But we don't say it dieseled off, right? We say that it sailed off. And it makes me think and wonder. So I'm going to ask you, my prediction is that there's a 80% chance that the word DAO evolves to represent something different than what the acronym originally was intended to stand for. And it might be just empowered communities, or it might be this, or it might be that. But the specific definition of full-on decentralization, full-on autonomous, full-on organized is probably, in my mind, not really attainable in most cases. So whatever it is that empowered communities evolve into, and whatever kind of tooling they end up using and all the details around it, I think it's still going to be called a DAO, but I also think that DAOs are going to start to evolve, and that phrase, that acronym DAO, is going to be used in different circumstances. So random question, but what percent chance do you think that there is that the DAO word will evolve? And what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think it's actually going to evolve to be less relevant. I think that people are still going to call it a community, and they're using a DAO operating system, and that's how they operate. So I think it's like, no one talks about the internet and they say, oh yeah, I'm using TCP/IP. Well, sure, that's the underlying framework, but we don't talk like that. And I think that's eventually what it's going to evolve to. But today, we're working with the people on the bleeding edge, the people who are very, very new to this, always like, you know, the early adopters. And they understand what that is. And that really speaks to them. So for now, I think DAO is still in the picture. But I think once you cross the chasm, it's going to be just, okay, any community is going to be likely using a DAO operating system to function and to govern.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Like, how many DAOs have you helped launch? And maybe tell us a little bit about what your operating system looks like and what a DAO goes through when they're launching with you.
Sure. So we have four DAOs that are public. We won't talk about DAOs that we haven't. We won't let them launch on their own time. But what the process generally looks like is, you know, you always have to start with the community. If you don't have the community, you can't be a DAO, right? That is the first and foremost, the most important thing to have. So we get a lot of applications with people who already have communities, and they're like, hey, you know, I want to start a DAO within this. And so, all right, so great, you've got the community. Now we want to start putting in place the initial building blocks. So we'll start working on a charter with the members who are very involved. We'll get their review on it. We'll start thinking through what is going to be the purpose of this DAO. So you have a community. Now that community might not have operations that the DAO can have. So for an example, like the Kauffman Fellowship DAO, the VC3, they are a group of venture capitalists, and they have this great camaraderie. They have amazing people in the fellowship, but they weren't doing all that much with their alumni group. And so they said, look, if we operate as a DAO, we can actually have our own venture fund. And so they did that. So they started the DAO. They got people in it. They raised a venture fund, and the DAO and the fund are working together to go fund new startups. So that was something that the community it was really hard for it to do because it didn't have the right governance tools and mechanisms to be able to do that. And now that we put the DAO in place, it can.
So it's interesting that there's such a niche, like narrow, you're really, really picking. You have a, I'd imagine, like how many applications are you getting top line funnel?
We've getting thousands of applications. Now, you know, look, there's a very small number that are, you know, really qualified, that have the right community, that have a plan for, you know, what their activities are going to be. And look, you know, this is a very new space. We understand that, but we really want to work with the very best communities. That's our goal.
Now, I would say that there's a vast difference between a community and an audience. I would say an Instagram influencer might have 5 million people following them, but when they ask those people, let's just call them people before we give them a label, when they ask those people to do something, whatever that happens to be, what percentage of them actually do something? And sometimes it's 0.001%, and sometimes it's 2 or 3%. And to me, that's the scale that I look at to differentiate between a community versus a audience. How many people are actually engaged in doing something versus how many people are just there because it's cool or because they're consuming content, but they're not actually participating. And so for me, a community member crosses the line from consuming and enters the realm of contributing, or at least engaging in some sort of a way more than just clicking a like button. That's my perspective, though. Do you differentiate between communities and audiences? Basically, what do you look for when you're assessing if a community is something that would be right for Origami?
Sure. So you definitely need to have engagement, but you do see a different spread. So it's not like an 80-20 rule, but it's actually like a 90-10. So you might have like less than 10% of your community that's really engaged in the DAO and helping out. But that remaining 90%, there's small things that they can do to help out. And we see this even within Orange DAO, where we have members who are barely in the Discord. They're not voting regularly on proposals, but they're very well known in the space. They've started billion-dollar companies, and they can leverage their connections for small asks that really, really make a big impact. So even though their contributions may seem small on a time commitment basis, their impact is still huge. So you really see the full spectrum there. And that's kind of one of the ideas of what DAOs can be, is that it allows for these more flexible types of contributions. But you still do need to have those core people who are making it a more full-time thing, right? It definitely, anything, any organization that you're trying to build takes time. And whether that's a DAO, a community, a company. So you need to have some people who are really committed to it. But if you have an ambitious goal as a DAO and you have a valuable community, you can usually turn that into something pretty incredible.
And were you, because you said that you bumped into your co-founders inside Orange DAO. Were you an alumni with Y Combinator then, I guess? Is that how you ended up inside Orange DAO? Or?
Yeah, that's right. So myself and all my co-founders, we all went through YC with different companies. And we were all in this group chat on WhatsApp talking about the future of crypto, you know, what's happening. We had a few different chats, one that was more sophisticated, talking about the technology. And then one that was very degen, talking about like, oh, which NFTs look interesting. And those two WhatsApp groups were the genesis moment for the DAO. We hit the limit on WhatsApp and we said, all right, let's move to Discord. Why don't we start a DAO? And then, hey, why don't we start investing collectively in YC companies? And that's where Orange DAO was formed. And so Ben was running one of the groups. Johnny and myself, we were early committee members for the genesis moment of the DAO. And then Steams, as he's known within the DAO, built a lot of the early software. So it was the four of us who ended up coming together to form Origami.
Cool, cool. I spent 3 months just at the end of last year out in San Francisco area. I was in Palo Alto and traveling around and got to really, it was the first time I ever really immersed myself properly IRL with Bay culture. I did like 9 months in Cupertino a couple of years ago, but that was in COVID. So I never really got to meet people properly. So this last visit, it was the first time I got to fully experience what it's like to be a startup founder. Because of course, and I don't know if you know that, but I have my own startup as well that's separate from the passion work that I do at CityDAO and aside from this show. So as a founder, I had no idea what it was like to be inside Silicon Valley culture. And a bunch of my friends went through Y Combinator as well. So I got invited to a whole bunch of cool stuff that you guys were doing and just got to feel what it's like. What does a room of YC alumni look like? What do they talk about? How does it sound? How does it feel? Who do you meet through that? Where does it go? And it kind of doesn't really seem to have a limit yet. I haven't seen where those limits are. So I'm coming back to the Bay later this month, and I'm actually in the middle of planning out a permanent move because to me, this is where a startup founder needs to check out. Now, I mean, this is a total side subject. Have you spent any significant amount of time in Austin or Denver or Miami or New York even to like compare startup cultures out there? I'm just curious.
I haven't. No. I spent 5 years in San Francisco and then I now live in Rio.
Oh, where are you from originally?
From outside Chicago originally.
Okay, cool. My co-founder's from out there too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's really cool to have founders across the globe. There's one in New York. We have another one in LA. I'm Canadian, so I've been out here in Canada for the deep, deep cold break. And just running it and focusing on Twitter spaces, because that's kind of one of the biggest things that we can do. And in those Twitter spaces, one of the topics that pops up a lot is about DAO governance. And we started by talking here, what is a DAO? Where does that go? What are your filters? What is the definition of a community? These are super important topics. Now, how do we run a DAO, right? Like we can approach that from a new person's perspective, but I really like to go into the deep nuts and bolts, right? I mean, CityDAO has 30,000 people in the Discord, 10,000 NFTs sold, almost 5,000 different wallet holders for those NFTs, ranging between 1 and 200 and something NFTs each. We've got some quadratic voting. We have pros and cons about quadratic voting. We have so many flippers, what I call flippers and squatters, that hold the NFTs and they're waiting to flip or they're squatting for whatever reason happens to be, not contributing. So then that opens up topics about, should there be weighted voting power for people that are more active? Should there be incentives to participate or punishments if you don't? Should there be a tax implemented on, almost like a membership to be a part of certain DAOs? And if there is, what should the consequences be? Should someone be able to lose their NFT if they fail to meet minimum requirements determined by the community? And we can go on and on. CityDAO is experimenting with Coordinate in a experimental way. Just researching it is probably a better way to put it. And should there be full-time people or not? So these are a lot of really consequential decisions that have to be made. It takes a long time to make them and it takes a long time to undo them. So when we go at this sort of granular level attack of how to run a DAO successfully, where do you go? Like imagine you're talking to a seasoned DAO person. How do you have that conversation?
Sure. So there are currently a million different ways to go in terms of how to implement your DAO governance. And honestly, it really depends on a lot of the parameters of your DAO to determine which one makes the most sense. Personally, I don't think that we've hit the limit of what's going to be possible in this. I think we're still very, very early. And I think in the next few years, we're going to see a lot of interesting developments in terms of like new types of voting strategies, different ways of delegation. We're so early in this space. So at Origami, our philosophy is to preserve optionality. And so we built our fundamental building blocks to change over time. So when there is a new voting strategy that comes out or a new voting mechanism, we're going to support that. So we always want to be on whatever the leading edge technology is, what works and is secure. That's what we're going to go with. But we're always building to preserve optionality. And we advise our DAOs to do the same.
So what kind of structures are the four DAOs that you're working with now? Is there a weighted style of vote or a minimum participation or a taxation? What kind of nuances have you been working with there?
Yeah, so we've got somewhat of a unique structure in that we have two DAO tokens. So we have first a membership NFT. This is a non-transferable soulbound token. And this represents your membership. So think of this like your membership card. It is your right to access the membership spaces like the Discord, the Notion, maybe gated areas of the website. But it is non-transferable. It has no value. It cannot be traded. Nothing like that. Can't be sold. And then we also have the governance token. And so this represents your, you know, how much voting power do you have? And we've done this a few different ways. We've done it with quadratic voting. We've done it with simple token count. And then, you know, we're exploring some other options there as well. So having those two tokens is really important for us because we work with a lot of more closed communities. And in those closed communities, you need to have the ability to revoke someone's access. If you have a bad actor and you don't want to have to take away their tokens that they've earned to remove them from the DAO. So that's why we created this two token system where if someone is being a bad actor, the DAO decides to remove them from the community, they can revoke their membership NFT without taking away their governance tokens. Now, what we do is our voting mechanism requires that you not only have the right to vote, which is that membership card, that DAO NFT, but also some voting power, the governance tokens. So if you lose your membership NFT, you can no longer vote directly, but you can still delegate your votes to someone else. And so that's what we felt was a more fair balance for these types of closed communities.
Interesting. And so if I was to delegate my vote to someone else, do I have to give them my tokens or does it just give them the power of the tokens?
It gives them the power of the tokens. Yeah. And so we've got a base level of delegation, but we're thinking through a lot of interesting ways of doing that as well. I think one of the problems with delegation is that, you know, you delegate your tokens to someone else and now they have that power for life. So the people who've aggregated a lot of delegated votes, they hold a lot of power and there's no way to transition them out of that power. So one of the things we're thinking about is, all right, how do you have a slow decay in that delegation or a reset period where someone has to redelegate back to you? So creating these systems where you don't have power aggregating to one place, but you have this type of reset that happens or a decay in power naturally built into the system.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And one of the things that pops up a lot when I'm having these styles of discussions is if a DAO launched prior to some cool tool coming out, how does a DAO migrate its old system to the new system? And let's define the old system as an NFT or a token that has a binary, did a vote go in or not? Yes or no, and anyone can buy it, and that's just how it is. Because that's how so many of the DAOs in this last bull run launched, right? And so when I visualize it with my co-founder, we think about, all right, well, we could launch a new protocol style of NFT or token that would be perhaps better and more efficient. But what about the old DAOs, right? Because if the solution doesn't incorporate those who are having the biggest problems, then we're literally not creating a solution for them anymore. We're creating a solution for what would become the new market and banking on the momentum of the old market to hopefully predict that there's going to be a new market that could then be capitalized on. And then when we go into, all right, well, if we can't change the protocol of fill in the blank DAO's NFT or token, then maybe we can wrap them. Right? Maybe we can build a wrapper around those old tokens. Now, there's a huge voting process and legal implications about each individual's community's operating agreement and how they could or could not do and what they could and could not do. Because if I bought an NFT for, I don't know, just throwing it out, Kraushaus, let's say, and all of a sudden Kraushaus changed how their entire DAO worked and my Kraushaus token ended up being garbage, I would be pretty upset. And because a lot of DAOs are legally registered, I would have legal grounds to voice a complaint. So let's assume that a DAO gets through those complexities through really, really proper structure of voting on, yes, we as a community, we will wrap all of our NFTs, or we will issue a new set of NFTs or tokens completely that are redeemable on a one-to-one basis from the old to the new. I'm kind of rambling now. I'm going to pause and shut up for a minute. What would you add to that, or where would you take that discussion?
So you're exactly right. And not just on the tokens basis, but there are so many different ways that if you spin up your DAO incorrectly, it's like, you know, you're going through a maze and you hit a dead end. And now it's really hard to back out of that. There's so many pitfalls in starting a DAO and there's no instructions included. So this is probably the biggest reason why people end up working with Origami is because we guide you through that process so you don't make those mistakes, always preserving the optionality. So the way we've structured our contracts are such that they are adaptable. They can work with different types of governors, different types of voting mechanisms. They're built to be very compostable and work with different types of voting strategies. So we've really designed it to preserve that optionality because we know that the way DAOs are being built today is not the same way that they're going to be built even 6 months from now. And that's something that we're learning as well. Every time we get a new customer, we're learning how to spin up a DAO a better way. And so every time we do it, we're making improvements in our process and seeing what things can be improved. So where someone may spin up a single DAO in their life, you know, we're spinning up several every month. And so that's been giving us a lot of insight to this process. And so we know where the pitfalls are. We know what to avoid. And that's one of the biggest reasons people come to us to help them start their DAO.
And do you work with specifically older DAOs that are trying to change into a new system? Is that something that you've embraced so far?
We will do that. We're not opposed to working with existing DAOs. It's certainly harder, definitely harder than a new spin-up.
Mm-hmm. So maybe not the right target market per se.
Yeah, we tend to focus on communities that are becoming a DAO for the first time. But for the right community, we wouldn't turn that down.
So curious question. I have a couple friends and associates that are either they launched a DAO on some open source DAO launcher thing, or they run a DAO launcher and some of it's funded, some of it's not, some of it's completely free. I would imagine as a private startup that has capital, there's an expectation of return to the investors so they can bring it back to their LPs. What does the model look like for Origami? Like put simply, where do you make your money? or where do you hope to make your money, so to say?
Yeah, so we've taken an approach very similar to YC in that We charge a very nominal amount in cash terms, and we take most of our compensation in terms of DAO tokens. So we are only successful if your DAO is successful.
And I'd imagine then that means that you're probably doing a lot of hands-on, for lack of a better word, consulting and guidance and discovery and back and forth and Q&A. Am I giving you the right sales pitch of Origami?
No, honestly, it really is. It's a lot of hands-on consulting. Nothing that can't be automated down the road, but we choose to do it in person because we learn so much that way. And we're learning what to put into the software. We've gone through this many times now, and we know what to avoid, what to lean into, what the sequencing is. That's another thing. If you do things in the wrong sequence, that could kill your DAO as well. So even if you did all the right things, just in the wrong sequence. So it's really, really hard to start a DAO because, again, there's no instructions online on how to do this and not screw it up. And so really taking the right approach, you know, if you have a valuable community, you don't want to screw this up. You really want to do it well. And that's why we really positioned ourselves as that. You know, like we're not trying to help the small group of friends who are looking to create a DAO to decide what movie to see every week. That's not what we are. We're really going after the high value communities that are looking to implement a new type of governance for their community so that they can achieve more. I mean, I think if we look at OrangeDAO, which is the oldest example of the Origami framework in place, the Y Combinator community has such an incredible network. But to be honest, it hadn't really done much up until OrangeDAO. You can't point to a group of, they helped out with reviewing applications or helping people get into YC. But beyond that, really not much. And now we've got fellowship programs. We're funding alumni to go and work in Web3. We've funded hundreds of different startups through the Orange Fund. We're creating public goods. We've created the Passport Project to help people within Web3 and providing the service. So we've achieved all this in, it's been a little over a year, but it's the same community. So it really goes to show you what you can do when you put in place a governance model, an incentive model, where people get rewarded for helping the community. And I think that's where we get really excited about DAOs. It's like, all right, we've seen what it can do for the YC community. What can it do for other communities?
Interesting. And we don't have answers to a lot of this. Even in CityDAO, we're re-exploring a lot of our governance right now. There's some DAOs that I bump into that are very leadership oriented. There is a driving person, right? Or sometimes two persons. But often when there's the one driving force person, it's easier to digest what's going on. It's easier to look for answers. It's easier to point fingers either for questions or if someone's upset, they actually know who's responsible now. Some of the discussions, because CityDAO is a very different one, I think it's more spread out. I think that there's certain people that have sort of leadership status by default of just being active, but that doesn't mean that they're wanting to be leaders or that they are leaders. They're not. They just have a loud voice and they're there every day. If you show up for something every day, then of course you naturally get this, whatever you want to call it, you get more of a presence and it can translate to leadership. Really, CityDAO is very diverse and spread out, you could say. And we're trying to figure out some of this stuff. It'd even be actually probably helpful and productive if we all have a little chat with you as well, because it's such a new ecosystem. I don't know where it's headed. So on the topic of new ecosystem, what are the biggest challenges you see right now for DAOs coming up through 2023?
Sure. Well, you look, the wallet issue is always a big one. We'd love to see more MPC wallets come out that make it just easier for people to engage, particularly people who are not in Web3, right? We want communities that are just in it for the community. Like, they don't care about the technology. They just want to use the value, which is the voting mechanism. So they don't care about signing. They don't want to have to remember a seed phrase. They just want to log in and get to vote, right? So I think once we see a better abstraction there, that's going to really unlock DAOs for a lot more people. So really excited for that. I think on the voting side, we're going to see a lot of improvements there. Right now, most of the voting is public, and that leads itself to bribes. It's very easy to bribe when you can see whether the person voted the right way or not. So having more anonymous voting, I think, is going to be very beneficial. There's like 1,000 different small tweaks that could be made to the existing systems that improve them significantly. So we're seeing a lot of this just because we're in it day in, day out with different DAOs. And we're really excited for a lot of the people who we're partnering with to start building these improvements.
Do you have any predictions on DAOs to look out for coming up through this year? Obviously,
there's going to be a lot. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, there's going to be a lot of exciting DApps that are spinning out. And honestly, I think if we talk about different spaces, so a lot of the DAOs that we've launched to date publicly have been in the investment space. That's where we started, right? Was with Orange DAO, the Orange Fund. It was this venture type DAO. We're seeing a lot of diversity there now. So we're seeing different sports DAOs where you can have the fans base own a team. We're seeing gaming guilds where, again, the gamers in a league can govern the league. So these things where the community, it really makes sense for them to own it. There's hundreds of different examples here, but those are some that are really sticking out.
Where do you stand with the concept of quadratic voting? Quadratic voting was initially touted as, here's the solution for weighted votings or dealing with whales. But I look at that and I think, okay, so you have 500 NFTs and a whale's trying to float out and do something. Just spread them into 500 wallets. It's a pain in the butt, but you can automate a lot of that through just some basic software scripts and end up with the same effect. And quadratic voting doesn't really seem to do anything at all. And I guess this is where your governance separate token comes into play. I'm kind of answering your question for you. I just kind of put the two together. Is that how you address that?
That's right. So in closed networks where it is only one membership NFT per person, quadratic voting does actually work there. But once you have an open community where anyone can join or it's anonymous, and then one person could have, like you said, 500, 5,000 wallets, quadratic voting is kind of pointless then. So it works in some types of communities, but not others. And we need more sophisticated types of voting mechanisms to deal with that. So you can always revert to, all right, well, why we could do KYC. We could do random spot checks of KYC to see if there's multiple wallets that belong to one person. So there are ways of getting around it in open communities, but they're not great. And they generally depend on KYC to do that. So I think new approaches to this will come out in the next few years, and we're really excited to adopt them.
So random question, just before we wrap up here, have you bumped into the Game 7 fund, the game7.io? So if you don't know the answer to that, that's fine. I just bumped into it recently. It's a 100 mil fund put together for specifically developing of primarily open source code for Web3 gaming to try and enhance that industry. Because, I mean, the last run was pushed by arguably kind of crappy quality games that was like more focused on the blockchain component and less so on the gaming. And there needs to be like a big enhancement, right? So 100 mil put together, 5-year distribution, 20 mil a year. And what I found interesting, and I really was only reading about this the past couple of days, is that it's essentially structured as a DAO, and it's a collab from apparently, from what I can see here, Avalanche, I think Polygon was in on it, Forte BitDAO was in on it, Offchain Labs, Alio, Magnus Ventures, the Solana Foundation's in on it as well. So it's some sort of big collaboration DAO type thing with not insignificant sums of money that are designed to come into the open source aspect of Web3. I found that really, really interesting. So I was going to ask you a little bit if you knew anything about their DAO structure or what direction they're going, but I'm assuming it's kind of new to you as well.
Yeah, no, not familiar with their DAO governance structure. But honestly, we're seeing a lot of these where people are using DAOs as a more fair way of distributing funds. So whether that's in gaming or in any area, a DAO is a very effective way of doing that, assuming you have this decentralized community.
And you have some grants too, I think, right? Or you were doing grants at one point.
That's right. Yeah. So in a collaboration with the Orange Fund, we're doing $20,000 grants to different DAOs. So DAOs that apply for this grant funding who are using the Origami model, they'll be eligible for that grant funding.
Cool. Cool. Well, everyone listening, remember to check out, if you're thinking of launching a DAO, you can apply. And I think you have some grants possibly still open for the right select people, right?
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
So now remember, we're talking about a big funnel here. We're talking about thousands of applications and literally only a handful that actually make it through, but it does exist and it is there. So I suggest you guys to follow Origami on Twitter. Check out the show notes to this episode for their website, for the application. Remember to smash the like button for this episode, share it with your friends. And we'll be talking with KifDAO coming up next episode on 2023. And we're going to be co-hosting another Twitter space pretty soon with Origami. And I think it'll actually probably be coming out right when this episode comes out too. So you'll be hearing a lot more from Origami, a lot more from CityDAO, a lot more from all of us. There's a lot to build in this crypto winter. Matt, do you have anything you want to share? Parting words of wisdoms, life-changing sort of experiences you want to share before we wrap up? No pressure.
No, you really covered it for me. we're putting out a call to arms for any DAOs out there. If you're looking to start a DAO, if you've got an idea for a DAO, you've started your community already, come talk to us. We'd love to hear what you're working on and potentially work together.
Well, Matt, thanks for coming out today. Hang on once we click off here for a little follow-up. And everyone listening, we will see you next week. We'll see you on the CityDAO community calls. Join our Discord every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Mountain Time. We get together as a community. Anyone that wants to contribute or participate, you can join, participate, hear what's going on, add your voice to the mix, and we will see you online. Bye for now.